atom spins and superpositions.
Thank you. So I'm going to talk to you about some of our latest work that exploits technology that we focus on in our lab, namely the manipulation of matter down to the level of atoms and building up structures basically from the bottom in an atomically precise way. And also, lately, we've been focusing on spin, single spin detection through condo spectroscopy, for example. And lately, we've combined all of these to generate some designer state spaces, Hilbert spaces, and then use this real space atom manipulation to actually manipulate and do arbitrary rotations in Hilbert space of these designer systems. So the work has involved many members of my group who are listed here, several of whom work on our atomic manipulation projects. But in particular, the work I'll talk about, this quantum state manipulation, is the work primarily of one of my PhD students, Chris Moon, who's pictured here. So this is a good place to start. A few years ago, we did this experiment, which involves some of the techniques that I'll be describing for you, which underpin our measurements. This experiment I called the quantum mirage at the time, and to get an idea of the structures that I'll be talking about, this is an STM topograph. We use an STM not only as an imaging device, but as a manipulation tool. You heard a very good example of this on silicon surfaces from Michelle Simmons earlier in this conference. Here I'll be talking primarily about metal surfaces. In particular, this is copper 111. These structures are about 100 angstroms or so in size. We use copper 111 because in this case it has a surface state that we exploit, a two-dimensional electron gas, which in this structure you can actually see quantized. We call this a chiral, it's a quantum dot, depending on what language you want to use. You can see the buildup of patterns inside, which are the wave, we can define electron wave functions, as I'll show you. And this is basically a very sensitive spectroscopic map that's tuned to the so-called condo resonance, or spin resonance of this individual atom here. These atoms are all cobalt. This condo resonance is imaged. In this experiment, we projected it to a remote location to make a sort of phantom atom or a projection of this, projection of some of the electronic properties of this atom. Here, this is an elliptical resonator. And so these are some of the methods that we use to now make these superpositions of states. The apparatus is diagrammed here. We use custom-built low-temperature scanning probe microscopes with extreme isolation from the environment, I would say. So we have to go to some great pains to isolate from vibration, for example. We also cool to low temperature, and in the end get resolutions actually below a milliangstrom RMS. So our noise limited resolution is about a tenth of a milliangstrom. Atoms are quite big on that length scale, but as I'll show you, this is very useful not to look at atoms, but to look at electrons, in particular to look at electron wave functions. Okay, so this is a useful number to keep in mind. The technique is best summarized here, I think. This is a sequence of topographs taken during an assembly process of one of these, two of these resonators here. Same system I showed on the first view graph, cobalt on copper, and let's try this movie. This is just an animation of that same data. And the thing to get from this movie here is that you can see as we, first we're individually moving atoms around into a pre-described particular location on the copper 111 lattice, okay, which is not visible here, but we see the electron, 2D electron state density on top of it. And as we make these enclosed structures, you can see the buildup of standing waves inside the structure. For example, here the amplitude gets higher. You can see that in this structure as well. And that's because essentially this structure, when it's completed, acts like a quantum dot or quantum resonator for these 2D electrons that are forming zero-dimensional states inside. To give you another idea, point of view here, in addition to the scale part, I can tell you that this resonator, for example, it's about 150 angstroms across, holds 84 electrons. We can count each one of those electrons. This one holds 56 electrons. In this quantum mirage experiment, what we did was place one of these spins at one focus of the ellipse. And we then did a spectroscopic measurement to look for the spin signature of this cobalt atom, which I won't go into details about, but I'll tell you it's a Kondo resonance. We developed this technique of mapping out the spin signature, doing a Kondo map. This is the data set we acquired, which not surprisingly showed a strong spin signature on the actual real atom, but the signature was also strong at one other point in this ellipse. This is what we called the mirage, or a phantom of this atom projected over here to the other focus. Okay? And we could show that those points were, in fact, important foci by moving this atom, for example, off even to another symmetry point, and then this mirage would collapse. Okay, but on top of this, we know that this is a quantum mechanical system, and we know how to model it very well, because after all, these are simple, relatively simple materials, copper, cobalt, so forth. And so we can do, for example, just a simple particle-in-a-box calculation, just a typical first-year quantum mechanics calculation, and get out the manifold of states which are present inside this resonator, this ellipse. This is just versus the state number here. We know where the Fermi energy of copper lies relative to the band edge, so that's drawn in here. And in this case, I'll note that the Kondo effect basically influences and couples to the electrons at the Fermi surface. And so it's important to keep track of what states are actually at or near the Fermi surface. In this case, there's one state that's closer than all the rest. It's this one here. It's, if you count up the number of states, it's the 42nd state from the bottom. So this state down here is the ground state. And actually, we can image these states, but this is a calculation of what each one of those states looks like. It's actually psi star psi of each state, starting from the ground state. You can call this an artificial atom. These things look like S states, P states, D states, and so forth. But the state up here that I've circled is the one that's number 42. That's the one that's sitting at the Fermi level. Okay. Now, we discovered something interesting at the time, that if we just looked at this calculated state, you might notice this fine structure around this quantum mirage. That fine structure in this detected Kondo map, or spin map, maps very well to the structure of this eigenstate. And so the picture that emerged was that we've created a system, this eigenstate that's sitting at the Fermi level, and it's acting like a conduit, or a coupling between foci, which are close to the classical foci ellipse, are close to these peaks in the state density. We put a Kondo atom here, or a spin signal, over here. It was sampled by this one wave function and then projected out, primarily focused over here to the other side, but it leaks out in the shape of the wave function. Okay, that's what we detect when we do this kind of spin map. Okay, so that's the measurement technique and some neat things that you can do with it. We can go and do, as you know, an STM local spectroscopy, look for the density of states. The Kondo effect manifests itself in these systems as a localized resonance around the Fermi energy. It's very narrow, actually, and this width gives you the Kondo temperature. In this case, it's around 50 Kelvin. In this case, this is on this is the spectrum on the mirage, or on the actual atom, and over here on the right, this is the spectrum on the empty focus where there is no atom, but yet there's still this sort of phantom electronic signature from the Kondo effect. So this is what we're calling the mirage spectroscopically. But what I want you to note here in addition to that is that you could look at this as sort of a signal transmission device as well. This is an injection of some, say, analog information. We're getting it projected to the other focus with rather good fidelity because the line width and line shape is all reproduced. The main effect is that you can see this difference in scale here, is that there's an attenuation going from left to right focus. So this started us thinking about how to use these devices as information transmitters and information propagators, possibly elements to do a computation. In fact, you could also think of them in analogy to, say, an optical fiber, where you could have multiple modes and transmit in the same fiber, say, multiple channels of information. We demonstrated we could do something similar with multiple modes of electrons in the same resonator by starting with another ellipse close to what I showed you, this is higher eccentricity. And now this is just classified by the truth tables. You either send information from left to right or you don't. So that channel is either on or off. And a simple way you can imagine of adding another mode that's orthogonal is just taking this ellipse, rotating it 90 degrees, superimposing it on itself. And in this way, we're able to make another mode, we call it the up-down channel. And thanks to quantum mechanics, we can use each mode independently. This is using the left to right, top to bottom, and in both modes simultaneously without any crosstalk, because those two states are naturally orthogonal. Now, but that's about as far as you can go. What we then started thinking about is, well, what if we actually try to mix these modes? In this case, it's not very easy to mix or make superpositions of these modes, because by construction, we separated them out in this way, in this orthogonal way. So actually, we went back to these ellipses and started looking very closely at the energy spectrum. It's a big mess is shown here. This axis is essentially energy. This is the k vector of a particular state. This is area. So just this is proportional to energy. Just a more convenient way to write it. This axis here is called the deformation parameter of the ellipse, just the major over the minor axis. So over here is a circle at one, and this is a more eccentric ellipse. This is plotting out many of the state energies as a function of this deformation parameter. Now, where we were, this was also, again, the eigennodes that I showed you before. We now wanted to consider engineering this ellipse so that we basically tune in a degeneracy inside that big manifold of states, so that we could force basically a two-space or some n space at the Fermi level. The way we did this was take the states that we had, and we started playing around. From the beginning, we ruled out states that we knew didn't project nice mirages. For example, these are all the odd ones, or the ones that have a node along the center that I crossed out. And if I take those out, we're left with states like this that basically have these nice sort of two peaks. Most of them have these two peaks that run along the major axis. Okay? And this is just rearranging those nodes in a more elegant way, showing by number of nodes. I'm going to filter out some more. For example, these modes here are like whispering gallery modes. The electron is bouncing around the outside of the resonator. And these modes, it's bouncing up and down. And so we're left with some useful states. Basically, we started with this, and then after paring down the states to the ones we really want to concentrate on, we're left with a more manageable energy diagram. Okay. So on this diagram, let me show you where we were before in that quantum mirage experiment I just showed you. We're over here, and basically this is the state number 42 that I showed you the image of that we could map through this Kato projection, quantum mirage projection. You'll notice that if we follow this state a little bit in deformation, it comes to a crossing with another state up here. That state corresponds to this deformation parameter, which is an eccentricity of about 0.7. Previous ellipse I showed you is an eccentricity of 0.5. And you remember I told you this Kondo effect couples to the states of the Fermi surface. So if we want to couple to these spins, then we need to make sure we want this degeneracy, we need to get the eccentricity right, but we also have to put it at the Fermi level. Now, unlike a semiconductor quantum dot, we don't have a gate. This is a metal where we can change the density and move things around. So instead, what we do is we just change the size of the structure and sweep the level through the system. So that basically means choosing the area here so that the energy of this degenerate, these two degenerate states gets fixed at the Fermi level. Okay, so we can we can do that for you to design these ellipses. This is the design and the calculation that came from the design of all of those states. It looks like what we had before, this, except it's higher eccentricity, it's got the different area. And in particular, these two states now that I've circled are exactly degenerate, and they're sitting right at the Fermi level. Okay, that's what they look like. And also in contrast to what I showed you before, now not only the magnitude will matter, but also the relative phase between these wave functions. And so on this next plot, that's why I show you the actual wave function plotted. Positive is red and negative is blue. And you can see, for example, these two states at the Fermi level have different symmetry. This one is even and this one is odd. Okay? And I'm going to show you that actually this matters now. We need to think about the relative phase between these wave functions because we're going to form superpositions between these two. So this is the experiment that came from the design. We built this ellipse to spec to that design. We used 44 cobalt atoms. This is a topograph taken at 8 millivolts to show you the state density electrons inside. It's about 160 angstroms across with a major axis. And again, I remind you, these are the two states that we've designed this ellipse for. These are the degenerate states at the Fermi level. These are the labels I'll use, 2, 7, 4. 4 of those are quantum numbers, basically counting nodes. And I've labeled two points here. A corresponds to this peak in state density over here, and B corresponds to the peak in state density for the other state. Okay? And now we're going to start playing around with these states. Again, I'll remind you, this is what the actual wave functions look like. This is odd, this is even. Okay. So our first experiment was similar to this quantum mirage. We put an atom at this point A. If you recall, that's the peak of state density of this 2-7 state. And then we did this Kondo mapping again. We got out a data set that looks like this, which actually matches very well to the 2-7 state. So far, this is just like what we saw before, this quantum mirage. Okay. Then what we did is we slightly nudged this atom over along the major axis to the right to put it at point B, which corresponds to the peak in state density of this state. We did this Kondo mapping again, but we got out a data set that actually doesn't really match this state as we actually originally expected it should, until we thought about the problem some more and realized that, you know, we designed this thing to have these degenerate states and we're neglecting the other state that's sitting around at the Fermi energy. So it's not correct to just look at this state. What we did was say, what if we include the other state? Quantum mechanics tells us the way to include it is to make a coherent superposition between those two states. We tried many superpositions, and we were able to fit it pretty much exactly with this particular superposition of those two states we designed very well. You can see now this state density matches very well with detected Kondo map. So why that particular superposition? Here's a summary now of what we actually did in state space. Because we designed this system, it's a tailor-made Hilbert space, right? We could span the space by these two states I showed you, 2-7 and 4-4. This is one way to represent it with a phase angle or rotation in Hilbert space, and there's two rotated or new wave functions that come out. We'll call them psi 1 and psi 2. We could represent them this way in terms of this phase angle, cos theta, sine theta, two states. And in fact, there's all possible superpositions are allowed. This is just a movie showing all the possibilities. Where we ended up being in that experiment was essentially we started here at 2-7, and by placing that atom at this point B, we enacted somehow this rotation in Hilbert space out to about here. Why that particular angle? Well, I'll show you some more examples later, but briefly, you'll notice that actually our atom's about here. The system realigned itself to put a confluence of nodes through that atom that forced the orthogonal state to have this peak and state density right on top of the atom. And that's part of our recipe for why we see the quantum mirage. This state density samples that Kondo spin and projects it out into the shape of this eigenstate. So in a way, we're using the Kondo effect to tag the state, and then allows us to image the superposition. So let me go back here. So this is where we were. This is that superposition state. Now I'm going to move the atom again back. So this is where we were. We move the atom back to just about 5 angstroms or so. And we get out a new DIDD map, which we can fit, again, very well to this simple rotation, this simple Hilbert space picture. But we have to rotate. We have to do rotation by about 30 degrees in Hilbert space to get that. Right? So again, just by moving this atom, we've enacted another rotation in Hilbert space. Let's move the atom all the way back to the left, right, shown right here. We get out this data set, the Kondo map, and actually, you can see it matches very well to this particular superposition. I label this with an angle beta prime. The reason for that is that this corresponds actually to a slightly modified Hilbert space. This is the same state over here, but this is a different state. This is one of these whispering gallery lows that we were trying to throw out, actually, at the beginning, the 0-10 state, and the angle comes out to be about 130, this mixing angle in the phase. This is a summary then of that data, and if it's not evident to you now, I'll point it out that something very subtle but very interesting and powerful, we think, is going on, in that we've set up this state space, which we understand very well, and by moving just a single atom, you could look at this as like a local gate, basically, on a wave function. It's only sampling a fraction of a wave function at a time. By moving this little local gate here, we're able to, it acts like our handle, or it's almost like a gear shift into Hilbert space. It's how we access this normally inaccessible state variable, the mixing angle and the superposition. And in fact, here's some of the angles that we've accessed, but we're able to show that we can enact arbitrary rotations in, say, 2 spaces. So we might have a more complex system. I've already shown you 3 states look like this, so they would span a 3-dimensional Hilbert space. This is 2744. I put 0-10 here on another axis. We can calculate, actually, we can go backwards and say, let's say we want a particular superposition between this state and this state, or between this state and this state. We find where that angle lies on this curve, and as I'll show you, then we know exactly where to put the atom or this gate to figure out that, to dial in that superposition, to index that superposition. These are the 4 points I showed you earlier from the data. And briefly, what's going on here, I showed you 2 different subspaces, 2 spaces. The reason that we switch over from, say, one plane to another is simply the design of these states. For example, if our atom is over in this region here, it's basically not sampling this state at all. And so we're basically on this other plane between the 2-7 and 0-10 states, and we make our superpositions between those 2 states. Likewise, if we're over here, we're not sampling this state, and we switch planes over to the 4-4-2-7. In fact, we've learned that the situation is a little bit more complicated, but it's easy to reconcile. We have this big manifold of states in this ellipse, like I showed you before. The 2 states up here at the Fermi energy are what we designed for, but the system is not ideal, namely that our states are not delta functions. We have finite broadening because these ellipses are not perfect scatterers or perfect reflectors, these walls. In addition, our Kondo effect, which is how we image, it has a finite energy width, 50 Kelvin or so. That's some energy window. And when we image topographs, for example, we can't image at 0 volts or else we couldn't get a tunnel current, so we have to image at some finite voltage. That's all basically summarized here. And what I've shown you here are basically the 7, there's a manifold of 7 states that's closest to these 2 degenerate states that we've engineered. And they're showing up, blown up here in energy. The Fermi level is this dotted line. The dotted line on the right is 8 millivolts. That's where we take our topograph. That's shown here. That's the data I showed you support. This is the broadening of each level, and you can see that when you include all of this, and the red is the condo window, when you include all of this, it picks out about 7 states. Maximally, we're coupling to the states we engineered for, but also, in this case, these states around it. However, we're able to understand the system very well by doing a quantum mechanical Green's function calculation. And as a testament to that, I'll tell you that this is the calculation of what the state density should look like. And you can just match up. If I didn't show you the outside, you'd have a hard time determining which one is the calculation, which is the experiment. From that calculation come these relative weights of the wave functions. These are the state densities of those 7 states. And now I'm going to show you a modified way to look at this. These are not the state densities, but these are what we call state maps. They come from asking this question. If I were to give you a specific atom location and ask, what is the coefficient then of each original wave function in the mirage that results when we have that atom at that location? We get these state maps. That's our definition. So for example, wherever you see a bright spot here, that means if an atom is at that location and it goes to 1, then you're only going to pick out that state. Okay, that's the maximum that you could pick out, say, state 41. Likewise, if you're over here, you're only going to pick out state 42. So what this means, this is our prescription now for forming our arbitrary superposition. Let's say we want to collapse this into a 2-space, then our recipe is to go find 2 bright spots here and then gate or move our atom in a path between them. And actually, between those 2 bright spots, we're able to access all possible superpositions. So for example, between 41 and 42, we move an atom between this spot and this spot, and so forth. Let me show you that in a more colorful way. I'm going to take these state maps and just assign a color to each one. Okay. And now I've got these are the same states, and what I've shown you now are combinations of pairs of these states. For example, here's 41 and 42, red and green overlapped. Likewise, 42 and 43 and so forth. These are 3 pairs. And then what we calculated here is shown here in black. The black, what this tells us is that if you move an atom or your local gate between those confines of the black lines, you're going to access all possible coherent superpositions of that 2-space. All right. So this gives us a prescription that says we want to mix, say, these 2 states, make a superposition, and you just need to move our atom between here. And we do all possible rotations. Okay. So that tells us what to do. And in summary, then I'm going to end with a movie that you can ponder online while we ask questions. But let me just get through this. So we've made these quantum corrals and engineered them to harbor degenerate quantum states. We essentially tag it with a spin, project it out to image it to get an image of the superposition. We can then index any superposition by a location of the single atom, and by moving that atom around via selected paths, do some arbitrary 2-space rotations. And I'd like to thank our funding agencies, which are listed here. And let me, while I answer questions, you can ponder this movie. This shows you some of the selected paths that we've done. On the left is a real space manipulation of our atom, and this is a way of representing our state space, basically showing all 3 of these possible 2 spaces that we can enact rotations in. So, thanks very much.
Standard
STM
imaging. Could you just explain when you're imaging the actual wave function?
Mm-hmm.
How do you do that imaging?
Yeah. So let me write it this way to contrast this. In a normal STM topograph, what if we go into this language of wave functions? So you're looking at charge density, basically. You're looking at, if you have many states, you're just looking at the sum of all the charge densities for those states. So in a normal topograph,
you would be seeing something like the sum of some coefficient times, say the probability of amplitude of many different states. Okay, and so that's basically what we're imaging in that topograph I showed you. However, what's not accessible in the topograph, but we're able to access by doing this condo tagging, is the superposition. And the superposition is what I wrote there before. It's basically this sum over these coefficients A, those are the state maps, times our weight function. And then we look at, in the end, we're looking at this amplitude, but it's after all this coherent superposition. So it's different. And so we do the topograph to figure out what's going on with the states, how they're arranged, make sure we understand the system, and then we do that tagging to actually pick out the superposition. That's why the relative phase between those all the states matters.
Experimentally,
it's a constant current. It's called constant current map. So we're moving the tip, and there's a servo loop that keeps the constant currents moving up and down. Normally, you see atoms with that, but if you have enough sensitivity, you'll see these wave functions. And that's actually where we use this milliangstrom resolution. So the topograph, those features I was showing you in the wave functions, are on the order of 10 milliangstroms. So if you didn't have that noise sensitivity, you wouldn't see that. But that's what we're imaging, are perturbations in local density states, imaged as a fictitious distance.
Sure, I'd like to, I'll restrict questions now, and let's thank all our speakers so that we can move to lunch.